You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC. I'm Julie Burstein. I'm in today for Leonard Lopate. Nuns have been big news lately. In June, the nuns on the bus drove through Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia to bring attention to issues of economic injustice, protesting the federal budget, which was written by Representative Paul Ryan and passed by the House, which the nuns say would harm disadvantaged and most vulnerable families in our country. And this spring, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, which represents 80% of nuns in the United States, stood up to a reprimand by the Vatican, which accused the organization of focusing too much attention on poverty and social justice and of promoting a radical feminist agenda. Sister Simone Campbell is the executive director of NETWRC, a national Catholic social justice lobby, and she joins us now to talk about being a progressive voice in the Catholic community. Also about the nine state nuns on the bus tour and the Vatican's rebuke. I'm so glad to welcome you to the Leonard Lopate Show. Hello.
Hello. It's great to be with you.
Now, I think many people think of nuns as living a cloistered life, wearing a habit, living apart from the modern world, but that's obviously not the case. Can you talk about how most sisters live and work today?
Well, the vast majority of us are in what are called active religious communities, and we've been seen as more active recently as we've had this public eye shined on us. But most of us do work in a variety of settings ever since the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s, which was our big reform movement within the Catholic Church. Catholic sisters took those directives very seriously and moved out of what had been seen as traditional ministries, teaching and nursing, and getting way more involved in what the Vatican II called the church in the modern world. And so we work principally at the economic margins of our society or in other aspects where there is huge need within our society. Many of us don't wear what used to be called habits, or we always in my community we called them uniforms, but we don't wear the distinctive garb because what we discovered when we moved into the modern world was that that garb just kind of intimidated people and kept people apart from us. So we returned to what was originally the source of the habit, which was simple peasant dress of the time, and so that's what we do now.
You know, you say that there's been a lot of light shined on the work that you're doing now, but it also seems from the tour that you're seeking out that attention, too. Is there a reason that you sought to do something that is so public and would attract media attention?
Well, what we tried to do was I was getting nothing but hundreds of media requests to talk about me and us and NETWRC and why our organization was named in the Vatican censure of the Leadership Conference. And what we realized is this is an opportunity for mission. And our mission at NETWRC is to lift up federal policy where it's not in keeping with Catholic social teaching. So what we said was, let's use this moment of notoriety to pursue our mission. And in this one, we stand with our Catholic bishops who said that the Ryan budget that was passed by the House of Representatives, on pretty much a party-line vote, that this was an immoral document because of the way it treats people at the margins of society. So in this one, we stand with our bishops, firmly with our bishops, and lift up their press release and lift up our press release and say, this is not good for our nation. This is not who we are as a nation. And I must confess, we had no idea of a huge amount of attention that it was going to draw. For me, it was all about the Holy Spirit taking this effort to be faithful to mission and to the gospel and just kind of exploding it all over every place. So we've been stunned by the response, awed and humbled, quite frankly, but just trying to be faithful.
Do you think because you're nuns, there's a different kind of attention being paid to the work that you're doing than if, say, a community group was saying the same thing?
Well, it appears to be that. I had thought that because we don't wear habits, most of us don't wear habits anymore, that we were kind of anonymous and unseen. But what I discovered is that we are really seen in society and revered, and that our lives mean something to people. Even if people don't agree politically, people reverence the commitment that we make to be try to live Jesus very concretely in the world by being of service. And I was stunned at that. And so I do think the fact that we do take these vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, we don't own anything, we hold everything in common, and we just try to live the gospel and be faithful, I think that touches something deep in our society.
I spoke recently with a Buddhist monk from Nepal who had started a school there who talked about how people see what Buddhist monks do as renouncing, but really what he saw it as was a freedom to do the work.
Oh, yes.
And I wondered if that feels, that resonates with you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the joy of a vow of chastity, which means we don't marry, we don't have kids, but the joy of it is that we are open to all people as part of our family. I mean, for me, that radical acceptance of everyone as being a child of God and therefore I'm sister to them, I mean, how much more fabulous can that be? It is totally about being inclusive as opposed to the real, very real responsibilities of trying to raise a family and care for your spouse and kids. And I mean, that more narrow perspective. So for me, the vows are all about this wider reality. We don't own things, so we don't get tied down by them, so we can be free to respond. It's wonderful.
When the Nuns on the Bus tour took off, why did you choose specifically to focus on the federal budget that was proposed by Paul Ryan?
We chose the federal budget. There was actually not even a debate about it because it's the most serious challenge to our democracy as we see it at this point and to the role of government. And Catholic social teaching is very clear about the role of government is to offset the excesses of any culture. And government, therefore, needs to offset our excess of individualism. And this idea that the United States was founded on an individualistic idea is really, I'm saying it's unpatriotic, and it's wrong, and it's not accurate. And only in a wealthy nation where you want to protect your individual wealth could you ever try to pretend that we're not in this together. And the fact is that that undermines both faith. The Ryan budget, passed by the House, undermines both faith and our Constitution. So, therefore, it's the most serious challenge, I think, to who we are as a nation. And, therefore, it was no question to us. This was the focus that we needed to push back on.
I'm speaking with Sister Simone Campbell. She's the executive director of NETWRC, a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby. Now, when you rode the bus through Wisconsin, I saw a little video on your website. You met with Paul Ryan's staff. What was that like?
Correct. Well, first of all, you need to know that I expected a really small group of a few of our members there at Paul Ryan's office, and we were overwhelmed. I mean, I was told there was over 300 people. I mean, we were just stunned by the number of people that turned out. So that was shocking to us first. And we were welcomed to the office. We met with his chief of staff there. She took a lot of notes, and we asked if we could have a meeting with Congressman Ryan when we got back to D.C., she said she would report to him about the alternative that we're holding up, which is the faithful budget that the interfaith community here in Washington, D.C. has put together. It's hard work to put together a faithful budget, but we did it. And so we're saying that, yes, there are alternative ways forward that are responsible for our society, for our economy, and to deal with the debt. But let's be realistic about it. So she took a lot of notes. She clearly passed them on to the Washington office. And it was a very powerful moment for me, one to be received and heard by her. But then also when we came out of the meeting, like all these people had clustered around the doorway in this atrium and were just thanking us for standing up for people at the margins. It was so moving to me. I was quite taken aback and quite stunned by it.
What has been the reaction as you pass through these towns, both from the people that you see and your own reactions to what you saw through the windows and as you walked these cities and towns?
Well, one of the things I've been reflecting a lot on, we went to places where Catholic sisters serve and work in ministry. And what some of the things that we saw in these low-income communities with folks at the margins, the consistency of community that is built, the sense of relationship, a sense of beauty in each of the buildings, and this idea that human dignity flourishes with beauty and communal caring. I mean, it was so lovely. And then we did what we called these friendraisers at night, each night wherever we were. We invited just, you know, friends, anybody around to come together. And what I experienced over and over was how hungry people in our nation are for community, for connections, for the capacity to care deeply about our nation and to come at it and say, we can be better than this. We can be together. And the loneliness, my loneliness of the middle class, when you see it as compared to the community that's built in some of the lower income places where our sisters minister, made me realize what gift is given by Catholic sisters in their work, and we have work to do elsewhere also. We need to be together.
That's interesting what you just said, the loneliness of the middle class. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Well, this woman in Hershey, Pennsylvania came up to me. I was so taken aback. We had this lovely gathering of over 100 people in Little Hershey, and she came to me and she said, if I joined your organization, could you give me the names of some people I could talk to? Everybody here is just so angry or so blaming. I don't know who I can talk to. Isn't that horrible?
Hmm.
And then over and over, we experienced various people saying, thank you for coming. This put us in contact. There's hope. You nurture our hope. We can be community. We can be connected. And I realized that our political polarization around this individualistic model is isolating us. And often politicians want to use fear to drive us apart because then they have less They have less responsibility. They have fewer people holding them accountable, and they can create political sound bites by creating fear. It really is we have each other's backs, and we need to be in this together and have serious conversation about the serious problems we're facing. And that serious conversation can only be done in community. We've got to come together.
And it sounds like you, by going and meeting with Paul Ryan's staff, you were trying to model, in a sense, a way of having a conversation about something on which you may be have very different points of view.
Absolutely. And to their office's credit, I did get to have a chance to meet with Congressman Ryan himself in a one-on-one visit. And he and I both agreed that we would say about that visit that we had a cordial conversation. At this point, we agree to disagree, but we both care passionately about our nation and about our future. And I'm hopeful that caring passionately about our nation and our future might be... We also both agreed that with the election coming, it's going to be political polarization. But I'm hoping that after the election that we'll have a chance to have a further conversation and try to really do find a way forward because we do care about our nation.
In 2010, you wrote a letter in support of the Affordable Care Act, what's being now called Obamacare.
And you're right.
Which he's owning, too. Why did you think it was important to speak out in support of health care reform?
Network, our organization, had worked for 38 years on health care reform. It was one of the first issues we took up when we were founded. And finally, to be able to move healthcare reform forward. It's not perfect, that's for sure. Not everybody's covered. There's a lot of questions about it still. But the fact that in the richest nation on earth, we have almost 50 million people without access to healthcare, to me, that is a moral sin, and we cannot sustain it. Additionally, we knew that the bill said that there would be no federal funding of abortion, which is a key issue for Catholics. There is no federal funding of abortion, and two federal courts have found as a matter of law that that indeed is the case in the law. So we said this is a significant step forward. low-income folks will be covered. And I have to tell you, in Cincinnati, this family came direct from the memorial service of Margaret, a woman who died because she didn't have health care. Mm. She had lost her job of 20 years. She couldn't afford COBRA coverage, the way you keep health insurance after you lose your employment. She couldn't afford it. She only had unemployment benefits. And she died because of colon cancer. And they came direct from her memorial service to our fundraiser and brought me her picture, which I now carry in my Bible. And the fact is, no more Margaret should die in the richest nation on earth. This is wrong. This is immoral. It's not pro-life. It is not who we are as a nation. So for me, standing up for the Affordable Care Act was an easy call. It protects all of life. It wasn't even a close call for us.
I know there's been a lot of controversy recently, and some Catholic bishops have accused the Obama administration of orchestrating what's called a war on religion because of the Affordable Care Act's requirement that insurance companies cover birth control costs. What are your thoughts about that aspect of the...
First, let's be clear that it's a regulation for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. It's not the act itself that requires this. And that there's a lot of evidence that the Department of Health and Human Service has that women's health is better if women use contraception, because they think, even though there's risk with contraception, that for women to be aware of their bodies helps them have higher birth weight babies when they choose to get pregnant. You know, there's a whole bunch of other benefits. But the administration didn't do it well to begin with. And so we said no, that the initial regulations issued were insufficient, but that what the administration did within, I think, 4 or 5 weeks of issuing the original regulations was to do supplemental regulations that now say that those of us that are religious-related organizations, that we are aligned with the churches, can choose, the employer may choose to not provide contraceptive coverage for their women employees. And the reason they made this distinction between houses of worship and collateral organizations is many of the collateral organizations, like Catholic Charities, Catholic Relief Service, hire a very diverse population to meet the needs of a diverse population. So these women will have the choice to use contraceptives, but if the employer chooses to claim the religious exemption, the responsibility shifts to the insurance company. It's an elegant solution because, ironically, the insurance companies save money if women right. choose to use contraceptives. So it won't be a charge to the employer, and the employer can have their conscience and the employee can have her conscience. So I think it's an elegant solution. There are a couple little details they're still working out, but we have a year to do it because these provisions don't take effect until a year from August 1st. So we've got 364 days in which to work out the last of the pesky details.
You engage in the kinds of conversations that I think for many people are complicated, which is dealing with these very powerfully polarizing issues, but trying to have conversations about them. How do you set out to do that? What do you do in the ways that you might approach someone who disagrees with you to be able to have a conversation about these issues that are so central to our democracy right now?
Well, quite candidly, what I do first in each morning is spend a significant time of prayer just to make sure my heart is open to whoever I'm going to meet that day. Or if I'm going to have an exceptionally challenging meeting, I spend a bit of time in prayer just before the meeting, just so that I know, as Jesus did in the gospel, Jesus welcomed all. Jesus might have had some harsh words for folks, for Pharisees and folks that, you know, tried to make out that they were better than they were, but yet on the other hand, he always had a compassionate heart for everyone. So that's what I tried to bring to any situation. And then what I also try to do very hard is to find where we share values. Because like with Congressman Ryan, we both care passionately about our nation. And if we can meet on that plane, maybe we can then build from that shared value to some insights about how we see government, where government's role should be, and how can we build together. Because I believe everybody holds a piece of the truth. And it's just building together that truth, not scoring points or doing all that sports metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
democracy is too serious to use a sports metaphor for, and I urge the media at every opportunity to stay away from it, because it's about engaging challenging issues in challenging times so that we can have educated and really focused discussions to solve the problems we're facing.
You referred to this earlier in our conversation, that when the Vatican issued a report reprimanding the Leadership Conference of Women Religious Network was called out for a particular censure. Can you talk about that and what that was like?
Oh, that was so shocking. I can't believe it. You have to know we have 9 full-time staff at our little organization, and have the Vatican say, I mean Rome, say that we were a problem for the Leadership Conference of Women Religious to relate to was shocking. I'm still stunned by it. I get kind of stuttery when it comes to it. But I do know that it appears that it relates to our healthcare stance and the fact that our Catholic bishops' staff took a position opposing healthcare reform, and we took a different position. We supported the Affordable Care Act, and we backed the Catholic Health Association in their support of the Affordable Care Act, so which is now called Obamacare. And I think it's the political difference, but what's getting mixed up in our nation, and I hope not in our church, but certainly in our nation, is that while we agree on faith, the gospel, Jesus, who we are in faith, we can have political differences. The application of that faith to politics is very complex and challenging. And so I think that the Roman tradition is not used to that, the fact that in a democracy, faith can be applied in different ways by smart, educated folks. And so at this point, I'm holding my breath. I'm hoping that they can get the idea that it's one faith. We happen to apply it differently politically. That's all.
Was there room for you to have that conversation, or is this a sort of one-way conversation where the reprimand comes down and you have to find ways of responding?
Well, at this point, our organization network has no direct connection to Rome. So unlike the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, which is created by Rome, they have a direct line and a direct connection. And so they've been negotiating and having conversations in Rome. And I know next week they're having their assembly in St. Louis. I'm an associate member of the Leadership Conference, and what that means is it's sort of an honorific title that as an associate member, I'm a non-voting member. I'm not part of the executive sessions when they'll talk about these issues, but that we're supportive and we're friends. At our 40th anniversary celebration on April 14th, we gave LCWR an award for collaboration because our collaboration has been fabulous over the 40 years we've been in existence. So we will continue to be faithful. I must say no bishops have called me to ask for further conversation, but, I mean, being quite candid, I haven't quite known who to call myself. So we are trying to stay faithful to the gospel, and we believe that by living the gospel, this will all work out in the end.
I'm speaking with Sister Simone Campbell. She is the executive director of NETWRC, a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby. And we will continue our conversation in a moment. Oh, I'm sorry. Sister Simone, thank you so much. We won't be continuing. We'll be moving on.
I know,
but
I have another appointment, but I really appreciate this time.
Thank you so much for your conversation today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.